Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We've heard of Blackbeard, Captain Kidd, Calico Jack, but how many of you know anything about female pirates who made them look like a joke? For centuries, women ruled and terrorized the seven seas, a motley cadre of princesses, prostitutes, and privateers who roamed the globe. Fierce, independent women with swords and nerves of steel. Now their story is being told, and it is riveting. This hour on Point, the untold stories of the pirate queens. You can join us on air or online. Do you think the only female pirates were in the movies? What do you know about those seafaring women? Joining me this hour in the studio is Laura Sook Duncombe, a lawyer by trade, pirate enthusiast in her free time, and author of the new book, Pirate Women, The Princesses, Prostitutes, and Privateers Who Ruled the Seven Seas. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Laura, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. So what drew you to pirates as a book project?
Pirates is a lifelong love of mine. I loved Peter Pan as a child, and I went on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disney World when I was five.
Okay.
And after that, it was a pirate's life for me.
I see. So piracy is one of the oldest professions in the world. In fact, you start the book by saying that as long as there has been a sea to sail on, there have been pirates. They have sailed across every millennium.
Yes. Piracy has been around for, you know, forever. It's evolved and changed over the years. And, you know, I talk a little bit about in the book about how different women, you know, fall under the category of pirates based on their time. But if there's something to steal, people will steal it. And so, you know, they are specifically sea-based, which divides them from, you know, the sort of the common lowbrow robber. But yeah, if there's something to steal and a boat, you've got pirates.
So we know Blackbeard. We know Captain Hook. We even know the fictional Captain Jack Sparrow, right,
yes,
from the movie series. What's the history of women pirates?
So women pirates stretches back as far as piracy stretches back. You know, we've got pirates on Egyptian scrolls. We have pirates in ancient Greece. We have Queen Tuta of Illyria. We have Artemisia, who's written up in Herodotus. So women pirates are just as much of a part of the history as the male pirates. They've just been left off the record for so long.
So even historical examples of female pirates commanding men. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Artemisia was the commander of her own ship. She sailed under Xerxes. We had Cheng Yi Cao, who commanded a fleet that was larger than many legitimate navies at the time. Lots of women right at the helm.
Even under the belief in some cultures that women at sea were bad luck.
Yes, this is a common trope, and that's one of the first things people say to me. They say, well, aren't women bad luck in the water? Well, you know, tell that to Cheng Yi Cao's fleet, who, when they finally retired at the behest of the Chinese government because there was no other way to stop them, the Chinese government gave them a pension. So, you know, they lived out their days on government money, you know, a lot of which they could have stolen. So it's apparently not bad luck for everyone.
So historically, it was not easy for a woman to cast off her petticoats and her corsets and really tradition, right, to take up arms as a pirate at sea. Why did they do it?
Well, you know, that's a different it's a different answer for every pirate. You know, not all women pirates are the same, just as not all male pirates are the same. But, you know, many went to sea to escape harsh childhood. Many sailed, particularly during the Golden Age, you know, away from their home countries to in search for a better life, a new start, another chance, but also in search of adventure. You know, there's money to be had. So just wanted to get in on the fun.
Mm. You write that at the heart of piracy is freedom. Freedom from society, freedom from law, freedom from conscience. And you talk about female pirates. Gosh, they run the gamut from princess to pauper.
Yes. I think the one thing that does unite all of these diverse women pirates is this desire for freedom, to be the master of one's own destiny and to go after what they want with reckless abandon. And I think that's something, you know, in essence, if not in principle, that everyone can get behind, is the desire to just take control of your own life.
Are there journals or first-person accounts of pirating women?
No!
So how did you do the research for this book?
So, yeah, it kills me that we don't have these women's own words, with the exception of, you know, Sister Ping, who is a 20th century pirate who testified at her own trial. We know sort of her view of what she was. Researching pirates is really a treasure hunt. There are accounts in historical journals. There are newspaper articles. There are, you know, legends passed down. I did a lot of work in the Library of Congress. I have a lot of very slim, rusty volumes that I picked up in my travels over the years. I have a pretty large pirate collection of literature myself. Mm. And just sort of trying to piece everything together is a really exciting part of this, because, you know, pirates, they don't exist on the record. They don't, you know, they don't pay taxes. They, you know, don't get married in churches and, you know, register their birth certificates. So finding them is tricky.
So how do you separate fact from fiction if you don't have the written, you know, record?
Sure. That is a question I ask myself all the time. I think that, you know, there are clues, sort of. You know, we don't know 100% on, you know, nearly any of them. But if we have trial transcripts like we do for Mary Read and Anne Bonny, if we have, you know, many contemporaneous historical accounts, you know, like Grace O'Malley, just primary source documents from the time is sort of a thumbs up that you're on the right track. But, you know, we don't really know for a lot of these women. And, you know, I go into that in the book, that, but if their legends have lived this long, I guess my question is, does it really matter if they ever lived at all? If their story has outlived, you know, certainly what my life will last.
So talk about one of your, well, I don't know if it's your favorite pirate, but you talk a lot about her, and she has quite a story. The most successful pirate of all time was a woman.
Yes.
Cheng Yisao.
Yeah, Cheng Yisao. She was an absolutely incredible pirate.
A pirate's pirate.
Yes, a pirate's pirate. She's the one, you know, I said makes Blackbeard look like a joke. I think everyone should know about her. You know, she started, we don't know exactly where she started, but there are many reports that she was a prostitute in a flower boat in Canton, and was allegedly, you know, kidnapped by Cheng Yi, the fierce pirate, and he, you know, offered, would you marry me? And she goes, well, I want half of your stuff, you know, and I want in on the business. And he was charmed by this. So, and she, you know, pirated alongside of him. And then after his unfortunate death, she took the reins of the organization and just expanded it exponentially.
Well, and while most pirates were an annoyance to the governments that they pillaged, she was an absolute terror to China.
Absolutely. Yeah. China sent many different people in to stop her, and she just killed them one after the other. it seemed like there was absolutely nothing that could stop her, which is why eventually, you know, she surrendered to the government at the top of her game and said, hey, you know, give us a pension, let you know, my husband take a job in the Navy, and we'll go away. And China gladly took that offer, because they otherwise, I think, would have been, you know, robbed blind by her.
Notably, I mean, she commanded a fleet of 400 ships, I think you wrote,
off
China in the early 19th century.
Yes. I mean, the estimates vary, but her navy was larger than many legitimate navies at the time. Mm. She had, you know, this just unheard of fleet that was just massive. Mm. And it's hard to think about, really, just this woman doing all of this.
So if pirate women like Cheng Yisao are so prevalent in history, why are they so seldom known?
So that's a good question. I think, you know, women are frequently left out of history because women don't record history as often. Certainly, you know, in the Middle Ages, you have these Christian monks and who are writing things down and sort of editing things as they see fit. There's a bias against women in a lot of historical writing, particularly some of the ancient Greece. There's this, you know, Hellenic bias against women. So these stories get, even when the stories are told, they're told in kind of a way that doesn't ring true. So I think, you know, we live in a wonderful time. We've got women storytellers, women historians, and a lot more of these women are coming to light. Anne Chambers wrote a biography of Grace O'Malley that really sort of brought her to the world, if not for her and, you know, many other female historians who are telling these stories, they just wouldn't get told.
Mm. Pirates are known by many names in many languages. We've referred to them as raiders and sea dogs and buccaneers and freebooters and swashbucklers, right?
Sure. Yeah.
What united these vastly different people, diverse people, men and women, as we're understanding now, across time and space, beyond the peg legs and the eye patches and the rum and the parrots and all the rest that we think about?
Yeah. And most of those are things that, you know, were actually a creation of Robert Louis Stevenson and not really part of the pirate lore at all. But I think, you know, they were all united in, you know, certainly a desire for riches, but a desire to live outside the confines of society, to sort of, you know, be their own men and women, take what they want, and just in freedom, like you said at the, you know, at the beginning of the interview, just this desire to really live their life in the way that they wanted without anyone telling them what to do and how to do it.
And at the heart of it, was there a criminal element?
I mean, you know, there's absolutely a criminal element. You know, they are stealing. They're not, you know, pillaging and, you know, having a firm handshake at the end. I mean, there, you know, there were definitely pirates who were very bloody. They enjoyed the gore. They enjoyed the stealing and the robbing. But there was also, you know, during the Golden Age, the way pirate captains divided up the treasure was signed on beforehand. There, you know, there were articles, and every crew member signed this contract that said, I will take this much, I will take this much. You know, there was disability pay. You know, if you lost an arm or a leg, you got a certain share of the treasure. So in many ways, it was more egalitarian than, you know, the Royal Navy at the time, for example. So it's this very strange mix. You know, I don't want to say that they were noble creatures. You know, they are criminals, but they took care of their own. They governed themselves.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're delving into the untold stories of the ruthless women who terrorized the seas as pirates. And you can join the conversation. Beyond the peg legs and the eye patches, what do you hear in these women's stories? Does it sound like an early form of feminism? Here's a scene from the 2007 film Pirates of the Caribbean. At World's End, Elizabeth Swann, played by Keira Knightley, exerts her authority as the leader of a pirate coalition. She rallies her frightened sailors and the pirate fleet before a major battle.
You will listen to me. Listen! The Brethren will still be looking here to us, to the Black Pearl to lead. And what will they see? Frightened bilge rats aboard a derelict ship. No. No, they will see free men and freedom. And what the enemy will see is the flash of our cannons. They will hear the ring of our swords, and they will know what we can do.
In the studio with me, Laura Sook Duncombe, author of the new book Pirate Women, The Princesses, Prostitutes, and Privateers Who Ruled the Seven Seas. Were you lip-syncing that? You know that scene so well.
Maybe a little bit.
So there's a woman in film, but we don't often see them, that's for sure, as pirates.
Yes. Elizabeth is a shining example, and what I hope filmmakers out there will sort of emulate in bringing us more fascinating, diverse, nuanced pirate women.
So you talk in the book about the near sacred relationship between sailor and the sea, and how pirate women, well, did they interfere with man's sort of storied and complex relationship with the sea?
You know, we don't know, in as much as we don't have any diaries of, you know, male pirates who were like, man, that woman on this ship is really a drag. I think they do as far as historians are concerned, because they're just left out. You know, we've got Hemingway's The Old Man in the Sea. We don't have The Old Woman in the Sea. It's easy for men to write about, you know, taking off in the wild sea. And, you know, you don't see women in that picture, you know, culturally and across, you know, many cultures. So I think they interfere maybe in theory, but clearly not in practice, because there were so many women pirates and many of them were so successful.
Well, and the sea and the things associated with the sea are typically feminine,
yes,
right? I mean, ships are named for women. Women are featured as, you know, the buxom figureheads on the bows of boats. You know, the undiscovered islands in the sea are virgin that are conquered by the colonizing men, and on we go, right?
Yes.
What about those metaphors?
Yeah, there's lots of imagery that the sea is this, you know, wild, mysterious creature, you know, mermaids, you know, sea witches, the sirens, that's all feminine. And so you've got this man versus nature and, you know, woman is part of nature. And so to have a woman conquering this, you know, feminine nature just seems a little, it ruins the picture a little bit, ruins the optics, but, you know, clearly in reality is not a problem at all.
Let's go to Bonnie, listener in Frankfort, Kentucky. Hi, Bonnie. You're on the air with Laura Suk Duncombe. Bonnie, are you there? Let's go to Gina in Lewisburg, Tennessee. Hi, Gina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I cannot even begin to express my excitement that you guys are covering this subject. This is, I actually became aware of even the concept of a female being a pirate. When I was back in my late teens, I was into historical romances, and there was a author out there named Bertrand Small who wrote a series on a pirateess queen out of Ireland, not loosely based, but based off of Grace O'Malley, but the character's name was Skye O'Malley. And I was absolutely amazed at the creativity that this woman had.
So creativity, ship. what other characteristics, Gina, attract you to pirate women?
Just their willingness to buck the trend and just to, you know, to stand up to men, to throw every, you know, preconceived notion that men, you know, back then would have about a woman, to throw it out the window and just stand nose to nose, you know, with these guys, knowing that, you know, physically this guy could crush her, you know, could kill her. But, you know, the look in her eyes, she had to not have 1 ounce of fear in her because she knew that man would be able to, to detect it.
I'm with you, Gina. That's absolutely part of what attracts me, too, just thinking of these women going toe-to-toe with these men who would have been physically larger and intimidating, but just not backing down. And particularly, you know, women like Grace, who commanded them, who said, you know, not only do I work with you, I work on top of you, and you have to do what I say. Mm-hmm. So,
Gina, thanks so much for that call. Here's Diane in Rochester, Minnesota. You're on the air. Diane, welcome.
Hi, it's Rochester, Michigan. Hi,
Diane. Oh, Michigan. Great. Got it. Thank you, Diane. Welcome.
That's okay. I just wanted to share that I discovered recently through my Aunt Mary, who's our family historian, that Grace O'Malley is one of my ancestors. So I'm either a great, 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 however many granddaughter or niece. I'm not sure which.
No way. I'm so jealous.
Yes. I was so excited when you said her name. I kept thinking, oh, I have to tell them about Grace O'Malley. And Grace O'Malley.
Well, thanks to Aunt Mary for that, Diane.
Oh, yes. Well-behaved women never make history. I'm very excited about that. As a lifelong feminist, I'm very intrigued by that in my past.
Amen.
And the notion of the creativity that the last caller spoke about. As a quilter, I was immediately thinking, how could I turn this into a wonderful story quilt? So thank you for your work, and I'm looking forward to reading your book.
Diane, thank you
so
much. There's a three greats granddaughter of Grace O'Malley. Tell us about Grace O'Malley. Gina brought her up as well.
Yes, Grace O'Malley. She is, if anyone knows a woman pirate, frequently Grace O'Malley comes up, thanks largely due to the incredible work of Anne Chambers. She was an Irish pirate. She grew up in a pirating family and was in control of a fleet. There are numbers of legends about her. Probably the most exciting was her going head-to-head with Queen Elizabeth. Her son was captured by this sort of villainous English official, and Grace wrote directly to the Queen and said, you know, you need to let go of my son, and if you do, I will sail for you instead of against you. And actually went to Greenwich, met with Queen Elizabeth, and she came home with her son and Richard Bingham ended up fired in disgrace. So, I, to be a fly on the wall in the room where these two women who had made a career of not caring what men thought about them and just, what they spoke about, how that conversation went is just something I think about a lot, actually.
Well, let me bring another voice into the conversation here from Huntsville, Alabama, Benerson Little. He's a leading expert on historical and modern piracy and author of The Golden Age of Piracy, The Truth Behind Pirate Myths. He's also a retired Navy SEAL. Ben, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So what would have been the climate, been like for some of these women who were becoming pirates? Historically, what would it have been like?
Generally, they'd have to be outstanding in some manner. They are leading men, after all. Whether we like it or not, these were primarily male-dominated professions with the associated sexism. I think it helps that most of these women came aboard with a certain sense of family connection,
mm-hmm.
Often from fathers, for example. That lets these women, it gives them a certain status, I think, that might overwhelm any particular chauvinism some men may feel. The women would also definitely had to have been performers. They would have to have known what they were doing, have solid leadership skills, more so probably than their male counterparts. And this is one of the things I find exceptional about women pirates and privateers,
mm-hmm.
is that they were probably far better leaders than most of their male counterparts.
In what way, Ben? In what way?
They would have had no choice but to be, either whether it's in managing people or whether it's in a particular skills in seamanship, but in some particular way they would have absolutely had to have been at least as good as the best of the men. That just tends to be how it goes. If you're a woman, you pretty much got to prove yourself, and it would have been no different in the past.
The popular images of pirates that we know come from what's called the Golden Age. Laura made reference to it. The Golden Age of piracy, mostly in the Caribbean, I think. I mean, from the 1650s to the early 1700s, right? Tell us about that time period and paint us a picture of what life was like then.
Pretty harsh life at first. We're looking at about, you could talk about the early 17th century, but really we're looking at about 1655. When the English captured Jamaica, that kind of became a central base for buccaneering and gave rise to what already existed on a small scale, quasi-legitimate sea roving, primarily against Spain. It expanded very quickly through most of the 17th century, and then near the end it began to be suppressed, primarily because trade became much more important. And these buccaneers and filibusters who were at first good for plundering Spain, you know, keeping Spain at heel, protecting mm-hmm. the colonies, became a liability. They began to be suppressed. Now you have, by now, three or four generations of sea roving. Early 18th century comes along, the end of Queen Anne's War. Suddenly you have a whole lot of unemployed privateers. They're briefly given commissions to raid the Spanish. They abuse the commissions are revoked, so they turn pirate. And then you have the last few years of the Golden Age of piracy. A little bit different from the first few generations in the late 17th century, primarily because these men, almost entirely men with a couple of exceptions, went after ships of all nations, basically. They turned true pirates as opposed to privateers or quasi-privateers. Essentially, they'd had national support prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
When they began attacking everybody, they lost all national support. Naval presence was weak, so they were able to get away with a lot of things for about a decade. Then eventually the Navy government started putting money into getting the navies where they belonged and pretty much suppressed them.
Oh, that's interesting. So, Laura, more like enemy powers then, really?
Yes, yes. I mean, I absolutely agree with Ben that they started out with a license to plunder, and then all heck broke loose. When you give these dangerous men and women, you can attack people, but only some people. You're counting on them to follow the rules, and that sort of spectacularly backfired, which brought the explosion of the Golden Age, but then ultimately the downfall of piracy in the Caribbean and in fact the world.
Yeah, it was very difficult to put this back in the bag, so to speak. Once you've got several generations of people whose lifestyle and culture and tradition is sea roving, raiding the Spanish. It had to be suppressed militarily with naval force.
Let's go to Nicole in Pembroke Pines, Florida. Hi, Nicole. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was wondering, you know, historically speaking, there's a lot of women who have commanded over men in different ways. And a lot of them use seduction and their sexuality. And I was wondering if that played a role into how these women pirates were able to command over their male counterparts, or if for the most part it was actually brute force.
Nicole, thank you. Laura.
So that's a great question, Nicole. The only account, I mean, you know, again, since we don't have first person accounts from these women, we can really only make educated guesses. But there, you know, we have Anne Bonny, who was a paramour of Jack Rackham. And so, you know, they had certainly some relationship going on. But the only account that I found of a woman sort of using her sexuality is one written by a man, and which has sort of become discredited, which is the Dragon Lady from the 1920s in Macau. So I think it doesn't seem like you know, sleeping your way to the top was really a viable career path in the pirate world. I think, you know, like you alluded to, it's more brute force and the exceptionalism that Ben spoke about, just being incredibly talented at what they did, which commanded the respect of the men.
Great call, Nicole. Thank you so much. Let's go to Aria in Camden, Maine. Hi, Aria. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Is it snowing there, too?
Raining today.
Oh, okay. Well, my question was about, it was specifically about women like Grace O'Malley, who I'm very familiar with, and I understand she gave birth on a boat while they were being attacked by other pirates. I've met with Ann Chambers, and she does a tour with me once a year to these areas. And I was wondering if other women like Ann Chambers that were pirates also were these working moms, career moms. So they had their pirating career, yet they had a family at home like Grace O'Malley did.
A pirate is a working mom.
Yes, this is a question as a new mother myself, I'm also intensely interested in. We don't have accounts of other women explicitly being children. Anne Bonny purportedly had Jack Rackham's child at some point, and that child was dropped off in Cuba, either given up for adoption or possibly died. Sayida Alhura had stepchildren and possibly children of her own, but as far as, you know, this incredible image of, like, you know, a mom with a baby on her hip and a sword in the other hand, I think Grace O'Malley is it, which is possibly part of the reason why she's so endearing.
Mm. Tell us about another female pilot. I'm thinking of Princess Alfhild, Barbary Corsair. You pick one.
Sure.
Tell us.
Princess Alfhild is one whom I love. She is a Viking pirate. I knew nothing about Vikings before I started my research. That was a big blind spot, except for the you know, the horned helmet, which I learned is actually created for an opera in the 1800s. So that's actually the one thing I knew about Vikings. Yeah, is not true.
Okay.
But she was a princess who lived in sort of a Rapunzel style tower, and then when a man came and sought her hand, she slipped out the back door and took to sea and became a pirate, and had this, you know, wonderful adventure with her girlfriends, sort of, you know, sailing, plundering, and but they were eventually captured by Prince Alf, who was still after her after all this time, and she went home, she married him, she had a baby, and the story is told in a very sort of romantic comedy fashion, like, isn't that nice that everything went back the way it should have been? But I find it tragic, you know, that she went to such lengths to escape and then still got, you know, dragged back home to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen.
And so, how did that story reinforce how Viking society felt about women going to sea?
Yeah, so that's interesting, because we, you know, Vikings did not as such have a written language, so these stories were all recorded centuries later by Christian missionaries who came in and did all of the writing. So it has more to say about the Christian missionaries and their reinforcement of the home and family than it does about the Vikings themselves.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
life a roving over the sea.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the incredible untold stories of pirate women. You can join the conversation. Are women better leaders on the high seas? Do women need to make sure the stories of other women live on? In the studio with me, Laura Souk Duncombe, author of Pirate Women, Prostitutes, Princesses, Prostitutes, and Privateers Who Ruled the Seven Seas. And in Huntsville, Alabama, is pirate expert Benerson Little. I wanted to play these clips, two of them. This is the first from the 1952 film Blackbeard the Pirate. Robert Newton plays Blackbeard. Newton, in an earlier role as Long John Silver, is said to have shaped the way we think about how pirates speak. Here is Newton as a ruthless Blackbeard readying punishment for one disobeyer.
Here's your scuttler, beyond a doubt. Truss him up with a cat first. Arr, then stripe him till he falls and douse him with salt. Arr, and when he comes to, arr, and then let him have it again.
That R, too. That's the pirate sound. Here's another one in a scene from the 2003 film Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. Jack Sparrow, played by Johnny Depp, and Will Turner, played by Orlando Bloom, make a deal with Anna Maria, played by Zoe Saldana. In exchange for help from her and her crew, Will uses a stolen British man-of-war as a bargaining chip.
Anna Maria.
I suppose you didn't deserve that one either.
None of that one I deserve.
You stole my boat.
Actually, borrowed. Borrowed without permission. But with every intention of bringing it back.
But you didn't.
You'll get another one.
I will.
A better one.
A better one?
That one.
What one? That one.
Borrowed without permission. Yeah. That's the way to put it. Let's go to Noella in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Noella. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
So I'm actually a creator of Lady Pirate Comics.
Okay.
It's a webcomic. And for this project, it was my senior thesis during college. I had to do a lot of research. And something that struck me is how we, in addition to like not being any record of like women presenting as women, there were a lot of women who disguised themselves as boys and men to get on these ships and to get out on the open ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And how that kind of
I said absolutely.
Yeah, how it kind of intersects with sexuality, because a lot of these women participated with like prostitutes and such, just as men did, and you know, how that would involve a look at their gender and
mm-hmm.
such.
Noella,
sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point, Noella. I mentioned in the book that there are these are the only women that we know about because they're the ones that got caught. And there were countless women, undoubtedly who lived and died as men. And just the concept of, a woman living as a man and, visiting the local tavern and bawd house and, just what that would entail is a really sort of tantalizing question that I wish we had so much more information about. So it's wonderful that, artists such as yourself are making comments and sort of exploring this rich subject.
Ben Little, how would you say modern female pirates compare to the historical brand?
Are you talking particularly 20th century, 21st century?
Either way, either anything. What's the distinction that you would make?
I'm not sure that there would be. Are you talking about women pirates or men pirates?
How do women now compare with women of the past? Yeah.
Honestly, I'm of the school that there's really no difference. The fundamentals of human nature are the same. There were just a lot more social restrictions in the past, mm-hmm. making it much more difficult for women to engage in piracy or anything else. I still think that a capable woman who had a sense of adventure and willing in the past to cross a few social lines could probably achieve as much as a man if she had the right circumstances. As a woman, for example, that's not making quite enough sense. If she were born into an Irish piratical family, mm-hmm. She might be able to achieve a lot, as much as a man would, commanding at sea, as Grania did. Or possibly if she could disguise herself, I really don't think there'd be a whole lot of difference, past and present, except that the opportunities are a lot better now. It's a lot easier for women to, you know, even serve in combat today, which is relatively recent.
Laura, do you agree?
Well, I think I appreciate Ben's point, and I think that things are easier for women now. You know, we don't have to wear corsets anymore. We don't have these garments that literally restrict our breathing, but they're Spanx now. You know, I think women are still, you know, facing obstacles every day. You know, we don't have equal pay for equal work here in America, so there's still paid family leave. So we still got a long ways to go. There's still room for women pirates to adventure.
Let's go to Olivia in Pleasant View, Tennessee. Hi, Olivia. You're on the air.
Hi. This is an absolutely fabulous talk. I read a lot of sci-fi fantasy, and I'm drawn to the strong woman character rather than the female. It's like, help me, help me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, this would be a good opportunity to create a series for young teenage girls, because these women, you're right, they had to be equal or better in some characteristics of men, but they also had to have tremendous amount of decision-making skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would be great role models today for some of these girls.
Would be a great young adult book series, Laura.
I'm working on it.
Well, and not just a book series, but, you know, the big screen. Stories about pirates do very well at the box office. I'm thinking about Pirates of the Caribbean. What a juggernaut. I mean, $1 billion in four films. The fifth in the works. But, you know, none of these movies, Pirates of the Penzance, Captain Hook, and Peter Pan, I mean, none starring a woman, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'm glad you played the clip with Anna Maria from the first Pirates movie, because there you had a prime opportunity, an absolutely, you know, gorgeous, strong, intelligent, you know, woman of color pirate. And then she disappears at the end of that movie and we never see her again. They bring back every other pirate, including the, you know, the parrot in the second movie, but Anna Maria is left off, and I'm sure it has something to do with scheduling conflicts with Zoe Saldana. But I think there is plenty of room on the big screen for male and female pirates. And, you know, Hollywood, I don't know what you do. If you're listening, you know, these women are ready for their close up.
Here's Kelly in Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Kelly. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I actually have started doing research on pirates when I was 16, and I am in law school, so I feel like Laura's kind of like my spirit animal.
God bless you.
I did a research paper when I was in college about the images of female pirates, and I had a really hard time finding historical images aside from Anne Bonny and Mary Read of these women in, you know, in an art historical
yep.
sense. So I was wondering if Laura could just point to any images that she might be aware of that, you know, kind of depicted women on the seas.
Gosh, we had a really tough time. You know, there's a woodcut that's alleged to be Cheng Yi Sao. We have some woodcuts of Grace O'Malley and her, specifically her meeting with Queen Elizabeth. But, you know, as we've been talking about the difficulty in tracking these women down and on the record, we, you know, none of them sat for photos. So it is very difficult to track down images of them.
Kelly, thanks so much for the call. Here's a comment, a question from our website. Patrick wonders, I've read many pirates were ex-naval military who were unofficially contracted by governments to disrupt trading. Ben, do you know anything about that?
It depends on the time and period.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back to the Middle Ages, it basically piracy, privateering, and naval operations were virtually indistinguishable. If he's talking about the Golden Age, there were times in which naval vessels and naval seamen were released as privateers. The French, particularly in the 1690s, did that. Basically, their fleet was bottled up, so they gave their naval seamen permission to function as privateers, to put it simply. But for the most part, we have this image of pirates as being, you know, naval deserters and things like that. It really, they were primarily merchant seamen. Most of them came from the merchant classes, or in the case of the Caribbean, they were kind of a hodgepodge of wanderers, beachcombers, buchan hunters, merchant seamen. Some naval seamen occasionally. But again, it's questioned. The study of piracy is so vast that you can almost what you claim is a rule for one period might be violated.
Very different
period.
For another. Mm. Laura, yeah. Were any women pirates agents of the state? Another question from our website.
Yes. Well, we had Mary Read, who was in the in the Navy. She was passed off as a boy by her mother to collect inheritance from her. Her own mother-in-law. So she was raised as a boy. She was a footman for a wealthy family and then joined the Navy and then left the Navy and then became a pirate. And she sailed with Anne Bonny and Jack Rackham in the Golden Age. So there were several women pirates. She's maybe the most notable one who had careers in the Navy and then left the Navy to turn pirate.
And there was an Islamic pirate, Saida Al-Hura?
Yes, Saida Al-Hura. She is one of my favorites. She was the pirate queen of the Mediterranean. She did not, as far as we know, set foot on the ship herself, but she commanded this pirate empire. She was an ally of the feared Barbarossa pirates, the Barbary Corsairs out of Algiers. And when she married the king of Morocco, she made him come to her for their wedding. And it's one of the only times in history that the groom, you know, packed up and headed to her. So she then she disappears from the records. You know, she was married to the king of Morocco and ran the Mediterranean pirates. And we have no idea what happened to her.
Mm. Diane in Albeda Springs, Louisiana. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. I just wondered if you had seen the series Black Sails, which featured Anne and Jack Rackham, Anne Bonny and Jack Rackham, and your comments on that particular series. I think it was a Starz series.
All right, Diane,
absolutely.
Thanks.
Well, I can do you one better because Benerson, who's on the line with us, is the consultant for Black Sails. But I have seen it. I'm not completely caught up, so don't spoil the ending for me. But I absolutely love it, and I love what they've done with Anne Bonny, and her relationship with Rackham is very... it's complicated and nuanced, and they definitely step outside of traditional gender roles, and I love that. I think that provides endless fascination. I am absolutely addicted. I was actually watching it last night when I should have been going to bed preparing for this interview. So,
thanks, Diane. Let's go to Patrick in Columbia, Missouri. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, just a quick question. I'm really a big fan of genre fiction, and one thing I've noticed is that we see a little bit more of these female scoundrel characters like Kara Thrace from Battlestar Galactica. There's a popular one on Dragon Age video game who's actually is a pirate named Isabella. But we don't see a lot of, like, we haven't seen a female pirate movie yet. And I was wondering if, you know, why hasn't that happened? It seems like a natural idea for Hollywood.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm with you. I would love to see it. I think Chengyi Sao could have a fantastic movie out there. I think we're ready. We're just waiting for Hollywood to get with the program.
Laura, you explore not only the lives of women living as pirates, but also the lives they left behind at home. Give us an example.
I guess, you know, it can go back to Mary Read, that she had this, you know, very difficult childhood, you know, being dressed as a boy. And then, you know, in the service of others, there were other women who were, you know, were prostitutes. They were, you know, victims of crime. They saw their parents murdered in front of them, in the case of Jacquot Delahaye. Very few of them had really happy childhoods. I guess Anne Bonny was a beloved bastard daughter of her father, but they ended up, you know, sort of leaving Ireland in shame when the affair was discovered. And so I think, you know, really happy young ladies seldom turn to the sea. I don't know what that says about me. the worlds that they left behind, I think, contributed to their ability to be fighters, which is, I think, what led them to be so successful.
Their ability to be fighters. They also had, in some cases, different rules of engagement, right? I mean, I read with interest the Chinese pirate that we spoke of at the beginning, Cheng Aisao. Notably, she explicitly banned the rape of female captives, a crime that was punishable by death.
Yes. She had every ship sort of was a nation unto itself, and they had their own codes of conduct that everyone signed on to at the beginning of a voyage, and there were harsh penalties for violating those codes. And Cheng Aisao is sort of legendary for her strict codes of conduct, and she had, you know, some wacky stuff in there that sort of cast aspersions on this idea of her banning rape. That you know, some people say it was just about control, and she wasn't really, you know, for taking care of women, and she's not really this, you know, savior of women. And you know, I think you have to look at the time period in which she was coming from, but also just the fact that she exerted such a strict code of conduct and required absolute adherence to her rules. And I think that's really impressive.
After all your research, Laura, what have you learned about women pirates that is most interesting or intriguing to you?
Gosh, I think just how much like them we still are today. You know, I think the concerns of these women and their desires to live a full life and to be able to be in charge of their own destiny. These are concerns that, you know, I'm worried about. My friends are worried about. I think that this adventurous spirit and this desire to be one's own woman, despite the fact, you know, I've never wielded a sword or shot a cannon, but I think I have a lot in common with these women, and I think most women do as well.
Well, it's a rollicking good read. Laura Sook Duncombe, author of the new book Pirate Women, The Princesses, Prostitutes, and Privateers Who Ruled the Seven Seas. Many thanks for being here.
Thank you so much
for
having me.
Lots of fun. And Benerson Little, pirate expert and author of The Golden Age of Piracy, The Truth Behind Pirate Myths. Ben, thanks to you.
Thanks much.
You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get our On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's Grace O'Malley going out. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. With an offer from the crown, hike the Thames, boys, up the Thames, boys. It's Gracie, breath to breath, with the one Elizabeth.